March 21st will come to order. It's approximately 1:46. We've got three items on the agenda. I think we're going to, is it four? No, three. All right. I think we're going to move first to the less complex ones, perhaps. Senator Gerlach, Senate File 2255, was challenged on the incurred a Rule 21 challenge on the floor in terms of the appropriateness of the committee referral. I believe, Senator Gerlach, that this was referred to the floor for the general orders calendar. It was intercepted and by Senator Laurie, and I am not sure if he particularly designated a committee. I think he did. But, Senator Laurie, would you come before the meeting or the group and indicate your desires on this?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this a little bit. This is Senate File 2255 is really pretty clearly a health insurance exchange bill. And it's a very important conversation that we have, and I fully applaud that effort to have the conversation. But one of the committees that it needs to stop by, and it went to Commerce, and that's an appropriate reference as well, but it really needs to come to the Health and Human Services Committee. I mean, the rule I'm offering is pretty simple. Health insurance bills need to come to the Health Committee. In fact, we got a pretty good lesson about that a couple of weeks ago with an MCHA bill that I approached the author and the chair of the Health and Human Services Committee about and said there's serious health implications in here, and I'd really appreciate it if health insurance bills come to the Health Committee. And I was told no, and we went ahead and processed that on the floor, and then I started investigating the health implications on my own without the help of the committee process, which I believe in very strongly.
Chairman, point of order?
Point of order, Senator Gerlach.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're supposed to be talking about the bill that was referred on the Rule 21 and not a previous bill that was on the floor?
That's correct. You keep it to the Rule 21
All right.
Bill.
I mean, my point is simple.
Yeah.
Health insurance bills should come to the Health Committee. It's a pretty simple rule. We have been had problems with it in the past. This bill, you know, some of the problems that it has, you know, one of the things, it says that basically you can't have an exchange that that would be anything but a nonprofit, really. And one of the things in my health insurance exchange bill, which actually did get referred out of the Commerce Committee and into the Health Committee, one of the things that Senate File 2255 does is makes it so that no exchange could be run except for basically as a nonprofit. And I get that argument. I'm not saying right or wrong, but it has significant implications. My bill, we had long conversations about where an exchange should be located in the task force. And, you know, our recommendation is because of the about a third of the recipients in a health insurance exchange would be Medicaid recipients. And a federal rule requires that public employees be accountable for Medicaid eligibility determinations, and it really doesn't meet that if we were to adopt this bill. I mean, these are just some of the really important health conversations that need to be a part of any discussion about implementing the health insurance exchange.
Senator Gerlach, do you have comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I would say is that the past 2 years, especially with the exchange issue, there's been a lot of overlapping jurisdictions about whether a bill should dealing with insurance is strictly a commerce bill or whether it should go to the health committee. And I've received conflicting advice on that, as I know the health chair. And what I'll say that in this case, I am unsure. And because of that, I think that I would urge the committee to go along with Senator Laurie's recommendation, and I would urge the committee to re-refer this bill to the Health Committee.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? If not, Senate Counsel will provide a motion to move in that direction.
Mr. Chairman and members, again, since this is a Rule 21 motion, the committee actually does not have the bill itself before the committee, but rather the committee report. So I think the proper motion would be for the committee to recommend that the committee report for Senate File 2255 be adopted and amended so that the bill is re-referred to the committee.
Might there be a motion to that effect? Motion by Senator Michelle. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
If it cannot be heard in health by the end of this week, would we also need to give it an exemption to the deadline?
Mr. Browder, Senator.
I think it would be, if we were not able to get a hearing this week, then it would be a late bill, and then it would have to come back to rules. And I guess it would be my hope that since this has been a gray area, that if that occurs, that this committee would give favorable consideration to that. And I do know that Senator Lurie's intent is not to derail the bill, as from that respect, from a process perspective, that he is sincere, and that this needs to be the Health Committee, and I'm willing to do that. And I think that when that time would come, we'll deal with it.
Senator Lurie?
I guess I'd have to, and I agree, I'm not trying to kill the bill. I'm trying to foster a good dialogue with the people of Minnesota. And with the committees that I think have an important piece of this. But I think that it probably already missed the first deadline. If it goes to health, you might have to, because it didn't, I don't think it's even introduced in the House yet. And so it didn't meet House deadline. So we're already into a period probably where it's beyond deadlines. You guys are the Rules Committee. You do that. So I would defer to you, but it might need an exemption even to get a hearing in Health and Human Services. I don't know. I'm just putting that up. And I would encourage you to waive whatever deadlines are necessary to allow the conversation to continue.
Senator Consul, can you help us with advice?
We don't have the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry. Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to help. I think the history has been
that
we have a bill that's a late bill because of a Rules Committee action. I don't think, in that instance, my sense is over the years, we've allowed the bills to go forward then to the next committee. Now, I can't speak to Senator Lurie's concern about, the bill doesn't have a companion or whatever's going on in the House, but at least insofar as Rules Committee action is concerned, if the bill's been brought in on a Rule 21 motion into the Rules Committee and the Rules Committee doesn't meet, the next half hour to take care of it, I don't think we've ever raised a concern about then referral back to rules and then back to the floor, to the committee of jurisdiction, wherever it might have to go.
Senator Cohen, are you assuming there's an assumption of deadline being met, so to speak?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that where a bill has been brought into the Rules Committee on a Rule 21 motion, as a consequence, in the case of Senator Gerlach, this bill then doesn't meet the Senate deadline because of the Rules Committee action of request of Senator Lurie, we have not argued the Rules Committee then allowing a late bill to be heard in another committee.
Mr. Bodderin, maybe you can convey what you just whispered to me.
Mr. Chairman and members, the original committee report on this bill, I think, was received by the Senate or taken up on March 15th. And at that time, I believe, met the first deadline. So if the Health Committee were to take this bill up, I think it could do that properly without violating deadlines. The issue would be with a subsequent report from the Health Committee. And at that point, I think the proper point in time for the Rules Committee to take that up would be under Rule 2.03 as a late bill at that time.
Okay. So, Senate Consul, we could concur with the recommendation of the motion made by Senator Michelle, move this forward to the Health and Human Services Committee. Should it not meet deadline, it would be brought back.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Benson here. Senate file 1283. Senator Benson, welcome to the Rules Committee, and my understanding this has to do with a commission which is established within this particular piece of legislation, and by virtue of that establishment, it needs Rules Committee action. Do you want to explain the bill just a little bit?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill came out of an ad hoc committee on Capitol Security that was first formed after the shooting in Arizona of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords to do a comprehensive view of security in the Capitol Area Complex. In the process of those meetings, we found out that it was well beyond the scope of the people that were at the table. While good ideas were brought forward, we needed to formalize the process so that security was an ongoing thought and not ad hoc. And so the key provisions of this bill, after consultation with the governor or designee, State Patrol may provide security for members of the legislature or constitutional officers. That is a change. The most pertinent for this committee is the membership in terms of the Advisory Committee on Capital Area Security. 9 members, including 4 members of the legislature, 2 from the Senate, a majority and a minority member. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Question, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was part of that advisory ad hoc organization started at the very beginning of last year. This is a product of that ad hoc committee. There's a growing concern that there are security issues in the Capitol complex that has never really been fully vetted or discussed, and that it is in need of direction. And as a result of the committee was made up of members of the administration, as well as both parties in both chambers. And it was a very well-balanced discussion. It went on for quite some time, a number of weeks. And this is kind of a preliminary formal step to create an advisory role of the legislature in concert with those in the executive branch so that we can begin to focus on security issues. I'm sure if anyone has been around as long as I have, and I know Senator Cohen has been around, and, well, members both on either side of me, I don't even remember going through an exercise like a fire drill in any of our buildings. So I think there is time that we should start focusing on that. And that's the real reason why we have this. But it really was brought to our attention by the shooting of Congresswoman Giffords in Arizona.
Further discussion? Senator Limmer, I'm tempted to say there are fires in this building every day.
And some aren't out either.
We somehow have figured out. But any further discussion on the bill? If not, might there be a motion that Senate File 1283 do pass and be referred to the General Orders calendar?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1283 be recommended to pass and move to the floor. Is that working?
Okay. Further discussion?
Chairman, is there
Senator Metzen?
Any per diem or mileage or anything in this? I don't see any. I'm just curious if
Senator Benson, any comments on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen. On page 5 of 14 of the fiscal note, the center of the page, fiscal impact, Senate File 1283 is net zero because it does not provide for per diem or expense reimbursements or compensation for support staff time. Absorbed cost is projected to be approximately $4,000.
Thank you.
Mr. Bodron, do you want to comment on what you just, again, noted?
Mr. Chairman, this is consistent with the information provided in the fiscal note. The bill itself does not provide that members are authorized to claim per diem, but the existing rules of the House and Senate would, under most circumstances, allow members to submit a claim for those expenses. Basically, it's legislative business when they attend those meetings.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess it doesn't have to be spelled out, I guess. Huh?
Okay.
I renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Limmer renews his motion to Senate File 1283 pass and be referred to the floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay, and it is so ordered. Thank you, Senator Benson. Lastly, then, Senate File 1577, Senator Newman, the constitutional amendment pertaining to photographic identification when voting. I'm sorry, we're on House File 2738. House File 2738. And members, this committee or this bill has been before, I think, several committees that maybe perhaps Senator Newman can outline for us. My hope is that we could keep this to the discussion of the appropriateness of this particular bill to be a part of the Minnesota Constitution. And in that vein, I hope, Senator Newman, you can offer some thoughts. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the Senate version of this bill, I will tell you that to date we have had two hearings in front of the local government and elections committee. Round numbers, we spent about 10 hours in that committee. I have been to the state government with this bill. I've been to finance with it, and the final stop is I find myself in rules. You know, at this point, Mr. Chairman, I would ask for your direction or your advice on how to proceed. At this point, I believe you've got in front of you House File 2738. It would be my desire to get to Senate File 1577.
That is correct. We want to adopt the Senate File language 1577 as a delete all. Is that it, Senator Newman? And I'm not. Do I have an amendment to that effect?
It's an oral amendment.
It's an oral amendment to substitute 1577. On to House File, what is it, 2738. Might there be an oral amendment to do that?
So moved.
Substitute, okay. Motion by Michelle. Any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That is adopted. Okay, we're on the Senate File, 1577.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll very, very briefly walk through for you some of the various provisions in Senate File 1577, and then I'll try and answer any questions that you may have. But obviously, this is a constitutional amendment, which is pretty well known around here for voter ID. And what I've tried to do with Senate File 1577 is to break it down into two separate components. One would be in-person voters and persons who are not voting in person. And for the folks who are voting in person, there would be a requirement that they must present a valid photo ID, and the nature and extent of that valid photo ID would be as prescribed by future legislators. If a voter ID, or if a voter, I should say, is unable to present a valid ID, then that voter would be allowed to submit a what's called a provisional ballot. And the object of that provisional ballot would be twofold. Number one, the ballot would not be counted unless and until that voter provides the requisite proof that they are who they say they are. The persons not in voting in person is language and takes into consideration number one, the absentee voter system, and it is my intent to also take into consideration the mail-in ballot system that is currently in place in some rural areas of Minnesota. And I have, in Senate File 1577, delineated the difference between in-person and not in-person voters on purpose, because it is my specific intent to not only protect folks who want to show up on election day and vote at the various precincts, but I also intentionally am trying to protect the absentee voting system and the ability for folks to continue to vote within the absentee ballot system or the mail-in ballot system, which is so important for people who may live in rural areas. It may be U.S. citizens living abroad. It may be our military personnel, and I specifically mention that because I think it's important that there be no confusion as to whether or not their voting rights are going to be protected. I have
included some language in the bill regarding substantial equivalent eligibility verification, and I have included that language so that specifically it's intended that the legislature will have some leeway in determining what type of photo ID or photo proof of identity that would be required when the voter wants to vote. And we, and again, recognize in terms of the substantial equivalent eligibility verification, the difference between a person voting in person and a person not voting not in person. And that's in-person versus not-in-person language may seem a little bit cumbersome, excuse me, but I've picked out and used that language specifically because of what is called the Crawford case, and that's a U.S. Supreme Court case that came out of the state of Indiana. And in the Crawford case, Justice Stevens repeatedly differentiates between in-person and not-in-person voters, and that's why I'm using that language. If passed by the legislature this year, the effective date currently in the bill is June 30th, 2013, and would require the legislature next year to, you know, assuming that the voters adopt the constitutional amendment, it would require the legislature next year to pick that idea up and pass appropriate legislation to comply with the constitutional amendment effective for the general election in the year 2014. The other thing that I would ask that you keep in mind is, you know, embedded in our Constitution, there are certain mandated eligibility requirements. In Minnesota, in order to vote, you have to be 18 years of age. You have to be a citizen of the United States. You have to be a resident of the precinct in which you are proposing to vote for at least 30 days prior to the election. You can't be a person that's been convicted of treason. You can't be a person who has been convicted of a felony unless your rights have been fully restored by law. And you cannot, according to our Constitution, be a person who is insane, mentally incompetent, or under guardianship. Those are the constitutionally mandated eligibility requirements in Minnesota. And it is my specific intention to move into the portion of the Constitution, the eligibility requirement that valid photo identification be provided so that people will be able to establish who they are, proof of identity. That's what I think is very important. With that explanation, I would finally add that it is my vision that it's going to be up to the legislature next year, assuming the voters adopt this measure. It will be up to the legislature to pass the enabling language and put the constitutional amendment into play. With that, Mr. Chairman, that would be my explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Questions of Senator Newman. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, I read the newspaper's stories about last night's debate in the House relative to this issue, and apparently there were several comments, and I didn't attend, so I can't I'm not going to suggest the full scope of the debate. But at least quoted in the newspaper stories were comments by supporters of the concern that people didn't have faith in the voting process, and that a reason to do this was to make sure all voters in the state had some faith in the process, know that their votes were being counted appropriately. So I understand that sentiment. But what leads to that is a concern as to whether if there's any fraudulent behavior on the part of voters. And there's been talk in the context of this legislation that this would prevent fraud on the part of somebody attempting to vote who is otherwise ineligible. So my question, Senator Newman, is if we look back over the last several general elections, 2010, very close election for governor, 2008, very close election for the U.S. Senate, 2006, not a close election, 2004, moderately close election for president, not, I'm talking about Minnesota, 2002, moderately close, not a real close election for governor, but three serious candidates. So can you specify the instances of fraud in each of those elections of somebody voting who otherwise should not have voted?
Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cohen, I'm going to answer the question in this regard, and I'm not trying to be evasive, because a straight-up answer to your question is no, I cannot. But let me follow up my answer with this. In the Crawford case that I will repeatedly come back to in support of this bill, Justice Stevens outlined three reasons why the state has an interest in protecting the integrity of the voting system. The first thing that he mentioned was to modernize our system. And he recognized that in large measure we have 19th century technology that is involved in our election process. And if we modernize it, we will then, number two, address the second problem involved in our election system. And this is almost a direct quote, that voter fraud is a matter of historical fact in the United States. And what Justice Stevens says in that language is something that, number one, I don't think we should ignore in Minnesota. And number two, he also alludes to the fact that we don't necessarily have to come up with actual cases and convictions in order for us as legislators to take up the issue of whether or not there are, in fact, proven cases of voter fraud in Minnesota. It is sufficient that it is a matter of historical fact in the United States. The third thing that Justice Stevens comes up with is the fact that if we modernize our system and if we eliminate voter fraud, or at least the perceived belief of voter fraud, that we will establish greater voter confidence in our system and thereby improve and strengthen our democracy. Those are the three reasons why Justice Stevens felt that the state has a legitimate right in addressing voter ID in the Crawford case. So, Senator Cohen, that's my answer to your question, and frankly is about the best that I can do.
Senator Cohen, follow up.
Well, yes, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, thank you, and with all due respect, an insufficient answer to my question, because I asked relative to Minnesota. Let me just suggest Justice Stevens is from Illinois. He's from Chicago. He practiced law there. He was on the federal bench in Illinois before appointed by President Ford to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I share something with Justice Stevens. I went to college in Chicago, and I was aware of significant voter fraud in and around the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. Historically, Illinois and Chicago has been well known for voter fraud. I remember one year in college I was doing some volunteer work for one of the reform candidate against Mayor Daley. That candidate got like 22% of the vote. But I remember going to a polling place on the day of the election. It was in an after-hours joint. Is where they voted in that particular precinct in the city of Chicago. Because it was election day, they weren't serving any liquor, I don't think, during the time of the election at that after-hours joint. So the fact that there is a history of significant fraud in parts of the United States, such as Justice Stevens' hometown, doesn't suggest that we have to follow suit. In the same way that you have legislation passed in the states of Washington, Oregon, and California that probably deal with aspects of the Pacific Ocean, we wouldn't follow suit in Minnesota. We don't border on the Pacific Ocean. As to the third, you also talk about modernizing. Between Secretary of State, the various county auditors, county election offices around the state, we have modernized the voting system over and over again. That's been the suggestion on the part of the Secretary of State relative to this voters' poll book or whatever it's called. As to your third comment, in terms of instilling confidence and the perceived belief, as stated by Justice Stevens, of fraud in the system or whatever, then I would ask whether or not there is any empirical data for the state of Minnesota. Fraud is prevalent in our state voting system. So I appreciate the comments relative to Justice Stevens. I'm interested in the state of Minnesota, however, because that's the Constitution we're seeking to amend.
Senator Newman, comments, or we can go on to the next question.
The only comment that I would give is I guess I came prepared here to talk about whether it's appropriate to put this in the Constitution, and I will do my best to come up with specific examples. Voter fraud in Minnesota, and present them to Senator Cohn, hopefully, if we get to the Senate floor with this.
I've got Senator Metzen, I think, first.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Newman. I was going to switch gears a little bit. There's not any fiscal notes in here, and something of this magnitude would have to require some money to implement it. And how do you answer that, Senator Newman?
Senator Newman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, when we were in finance, we spent a good deal of time going through both the fiscal note on this matter and a letter from MMB dated February 29, 2012. And I will acknowledge that there is money that will be spent as a result of this constitutional amendment. The only reliable information that we have in terms of a fiscal note is a total estimated cost of $2,000, excuse me, to put this question
Mr. Chairman, excuse me for interrupting. It's not the cost to put it on the amendment. It's the cost of getting the photo ID. For example, if Grandma lives in Hibbing, I understand Grandma, who hasn't driven for 10 years, would have to go to Duluth to get the ID. Somebody's got to pay for the photography. Grandma's got to pay the $42 for gas to get over there. That's the question. It's not what it costs to put it, per se, on the ballot itself. It's, you know, what does it cost to produce the photo thing, and who, you know, how's that paid for?
Senator Newman, and maybe just remind the committee, if we could kind of stick to the constitutional issues a little bit, that would be helpful. But Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll tell you what, I'll make a very brief comment. And when I do, it is a sincere comment. I am not, I'm not being a smart aleck. But the same question could be, who's going to pay me in terms of my mileage and the cost of the gasoline for me to get to the voter poll and so that I can cast a ballot? So. You know, there are, to me at least, there's some element of personal responsibility that enters into this equation of when people are going to vote. As to the amount that it's going to cost for the actual cost of the ID, in this day and age, I think that punching out plastic is probably pretty cheap. How much is it going to cost to drive to wherever it is that the legislature in the future decides that ID is to be prepared? I think that would fall in the category of personal responsibility on the part of the voter.
Michelle, I think you had a comment following up on previous comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I weighed carefully into Senator Cohen's discussion with Senator Newman, but I think, Senator Cohen, that you have helped to make Senator Newman's argument. Your recitation of the close elections in Minnesota over the last 10 years is exactly why we need an electoral process that we have confidence in. The fact that we have had so many close elections is exactly why we want to have confidence and a belief that there is voter integrity, and is exactly why we should be looking for ways to modernize and bring into the 21st century our voting process. So I'm sure that's not what you intended to do, and I'm sure you'll explain how I don't quite have it right, but I think your history lesson is actually helpful to Senator Newman's argument.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me explain why he doesn't have it right, since Senator Michelle suggested that I...
He asked for it.
Senator Michelle did, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Senator Fishbach's really. With me. But first, I just want to offer a general comment. This is truly an aside, but over and over again, what we hear in our committees is, you know, we got to focus on, you know, the particular jurisdiction of this committee, and we can't ask another question that happens to just go a little bit over the line, whatever it is. When amendments have been brought to the Rules Committee has served as a committee of general jurisdiction. And over the years, I've experienced with some of the constitutional amendments some pretty wide-ranging discussion within the Rules Committee because, again, it's a committee of general jurisdiction. So that's more of an aside. But in response to Senator Newman initially and then to Senator Michelle, Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, you indicated you'll provide the examples of fraud to me. Hope we'll have it by the time we have this debate on the floor, apparently Friday, that we'll be able to enumerate the number of times there have been fraudulent elections. As to Senator Michelle's point, that I make the case by suggesting historical fraud, and I cited some elections that were close elections. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, my question back to you is, okay, and will you please enumerate in the particular close elections we're aware of, which have been the governor's race of 2010 and the U.S. Senate race, a much closer election of 2008, if you could please enumerate the number of instances where there was actually fraudulent voting. And let me throw in another election, because I think, you know, one of the things, here's a concern, Mr. Chairman, is what is the commonality of those two close elections in 2010 and 2008. One commonality is that the Republican candidates lost the close elections. So let me talk about a close election where the Democratic candidate lost, and that would be 2000 in the presidential race, and in particular the state of Florida, a much larger state than Minnesota, where the election was determined by 537 votes that Governor Bush defeated Vice President Gore and as a consequence got the electoral votes for the state of Florida and became president. And as we all recall, the Supreme Court stopped the count in Florida in Bush v. Gore and stopped whatever state officials were doing in Florida. In that instance, the Democratic candidate I supported, Vice President Gore, lost an election. I didn't rush out. I was a member of the state Senate then. I didn't rush out to turn upside down the voting system, even though my candidate lost in what was a much closer election comparatively than 2010 and 2008 in Minnesota. So I would still like to know then, yes, we have close elections. Give me the instances of fraud in those close elections. Because that's what I think this is all about, isn't it? We want to make sure people are voting properly. So I want to know in those close elections when people voted improperly.
Mr. Chair, I promise my answer will be short.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Cohen, if we are going to have close elections, we need to feel confident about the results. I believe what Senator Newman is doing will help us to feel confident. That is a good thing for Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman.
We'll give you, Senator Cohen, we're not going to restrict you, but go ahead.
You know,
you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be very careful with my response back to that, because since, as we say around this place, my good friend Senator Roebling, and she's kind of a good friend.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, could you speak into the
I'm
mic?
So,
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry, Senator Newman.
Thank you.
In Senator Roebling's committee, I made kind of a quip which got some attention, and I want to See, she's nodding her head because I'm going to refrain from making the same quip. And now she's thanking me, my good friend, Senator Roebling.
I didn't hear that. Could you repeat that?
Pardon?
Where is this going, Senator Cohen?
Well, when Senator Michelle says we'll have, this will give us some confidence in the system, we'll feel better about the system. We're passing a constitutional amendment that's going to disenfranchise thousands and thousands of people so somebody can feel confident. Unbelievable.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I almost hate to bring this question up, but I do appreciate the historical reference of Senator Cohen. He seems to have brought us all over the continental map from Chicago and down to Florida. I just wanted to ask Senator Cohen, now where was Justice Stevens, where was he when he wrote the Crawford decision?
Oh, God.
Was he in Chicago and being influenced by the crooked election process in Chicago, or was he somewhere else when he wrote the decision?
Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I'm not sure because Justice Stevens quite frequently go back to Chicago, and a number of his opinions were written while he was in Chicago. So I don't know if this particular opinion of his was written while in Chicago or in Washington. He also, if I'm not mistaken, Justice Stevens has a vacation place in Florida, and he also wrote some of his opinions while in Florida. So I don't know.
So, Chairman, we're back to Florida now, and I do dread asking the question, but we have justices that come from all over the country, and they make their decisions based on the desire to do the proper, good judicial work for the people across the United States. The bill that Senator Newman has before us has been considered due to its constitutionality by the United States Supreme Court. And as a result, you may disagree with it, or maybe you might think that it was appropriate for perhaps the high volume of crookedness going on in Chicago, but maybe in Minnesota, if it's just a little bit of crookedness, it's okay. So I think your comments about where Justice Stevens comes from is really quite immaterial.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
All right, let's suggest that's the case. I'll stipulate to that. Then I get back to my basic question. Let's have an enumeration of the instances of fraud in the state of Minnesota. I've heard from Senator Michelle that we'd feel better and have more confidence in the system if we pass this. I've heard from yourself that I shouldn't start going all over the map around the United States. So my basic question back to Senator Newman. He doesn't know the answer to that question. He has indicated, I don't know if it was a promise, but he's indicated that he'll provide the information to me. I hope we do it by the time we debate this bill on the Senate floor, as opposed to subsequent to adjournment. So, Senator Limmer, I'll accept your criticism. Please enumerate the instances of fraud in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Limmer.
One of the most minimal needs for this type of bill is we're in the 21st century. We have things that it's called electricity now, Senator Cohen. And we have means to tabulate and to account for the identities of millions of people, and we can incorporate that to bring in an integrity into our election system. Why are we going back to the 19th century for an election process when we can modernize it and be an effective tool for the people of Minnesota and assure an integrity? I think that alone is worth this bill.
Well, Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Cohen and Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, then we ought to simply accept the poll book suggestion on the part of the Secretary of State. That will provide the modernization that you're looking for. I mean, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, no, we're not going back to the 19th century. We're not going back to paper ballots tossed into whatever, and nobody has suggested that. And nobody has suggested that the Minnesota voting system has not kept up with appropriate technological changes that can be utilized. So let's simply adopt. You make the argument then for simply adopting the poll book proposal of the Secretary of State.
I prefer this method, Mr. Senator Cohen.
Senator Bach, well, I'm sorry. Senator Ortman, I think, do you have your hand up earlier?
I'll defer to Senator Bach, but then I'd like to comment
Senator
if
Bach.
I could when he's done.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, to the enlightened age that we seem to be in here, and I guess I'm coming to understand more over the years why the House commonly refers to this as the deliberative body, But, you know, Senator Limmer, I don't know that we've come as far as you might think. I mean, if I was a college freshman, most of us get our driver's license when we're 16, go off to college with our home address that we grew up in. How exactly, Senator Limmer, if we're so enlightened, is that first-year college student with the driver's license or their address at home where they grew up who's living in a college dorm, which is required in most campuses your first year, how exactly is that person going to vote on campus when their driver's license clearly, in almost every instance, is not going to match where they live?
Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bach, I can only bring you to the example of the bill that I proposed last year. That was allowing, first, the driver license that someone would carry as a student identifies who the person is, not necessarily where they live. So we recognized that in that proposal last year. And in order to justify where they are living at the current time, all they would be required to do is bring in proof that they're a student at a college campus or where that particular residence is. It was really quite simple, and it's really not a far stretch from anything else that they do now. It's really quite simple.
Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Cohen's arguments, I would say that you've got a false premise, but instead I'm just going to say it's a bogus argument. It is just a bogus argument to say that for some reason we have to come up with a litany of instances of fraud in order to modernize our election system. It's just a bogus argument. You know, in my son's wallet, he's 14 years old. He's got a school ID, a library card, and a lifetime fitness card all with his photo on it. In order to go anywhere, do anything, he has to authorize himself to get in. He has to authorize himself to get a library book. I have to get some kind of identification to get money out of my bank account. That's the society that we live in. If I wanted government benefits, I would have to authorize myself to get them. And this is a very important right, very fundamental to the operation of government and self-government. And I don't think it's a lot to ask people to authorize themselves to be able to walk into a ballot booth and vote. And otherwise, Senator Cohen, we might still be voting with chisels and stone. Because I'm not sure you could have identified any kind of instance of voter fraud in the earliest days of voting. So I have to say it's a bogus argument. To Senator Newman, I appreciate so much the work that you have done on this, and I have sat through some of those committees, including listening to Senator Cohen's arguments from before repeated again in here today. And I think they've been adequately addressed more than once, Senator Newman. I think you've done an excellent job.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I do think that we can solve whatever questions there are about the implementation with enabling legislation next year. And I think that's what we should do. Senator Newman's bill says, well, if the governor vetoed voter ID as a statutory measure, let's ask the people of Minnesota, the voters, if they want to make this change. I think it's a pretty straightforward question for the voters to be asked. Yeah. And if they say yes, we as a legislature, whether it's currently configured or in its future configuration, is perfectly capable of adopting plans to implement or adopt regulations or even pass the budget necessary to make the appropriate changes. And we have done that in the past. We did that with the sales tax just recently. We adopted changes after the voters approved the sales tax increase to come up with the commissions for how do we distribute the money. So we are perfectly capable of doing that after we've heard from the voters whether this is their priority and whether this does rise to a constitutional level. I think we can trust them to do it. One other comment, Mr. Chair, and this would be encouragement for Senator Newman. I'm not going to offer an amendment today, Senator Newman, but I have a suggested change that I would ask you to consider going forward. When we're talking about modernizing our system, as Justice Stevens has encouraged us to do, I'm concerned that maybe if we rely on photographic identification in our Constitution, that it might become outdated at some point. I don't know when that might be. But I want our constitutional provisions, as they have served us for over 150 years, to continue to serve us for 150 more. And I think that our language should be broad enough to include all types of modernization in terms of identification. So I would, if I'm not going to offer this today, Senator Newman, but if you would please consider adding the words "or equivalent" on lines 1.13 after photographic identification. So if there are other forms that we adopt technologically and make advancements to other forms, that we could use that. And I think the same change should be made on 1.23 after the word "photographic identification." And then also on 2.9, after the words "photographic identification," add "or equivalent." And I think then the language and the question to the voters will withstand the test of time and the further modernizations. So with that, Senator Newman, thank you so much for all your hard work on this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cook, Senator Newman.
Senator Ortman, the last line number,
2.9, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Senator Ortman, Mr. Chairman. And, yes, I will certainly take a look at that and consider it. I appreciate the offer to try and improve the bill.
Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to give them
– No, I understand.
I'm not sure if Senator Ortman was moving – language.
She was not moving language. Okay, it was a friendly suggestion.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman,
we're looking for friendly suggestions.
Well, I guess I'm not going to win any elections today as most popular state senator on the Rules Committee. That's very clear.
High in my book.
Pardon?
You're high in my book.
Well, Senator Ortman, my not-so-very-good friend, would suggest otherwise, but...
I thought we were still friends, Senator Cole.
Okay, well,
let's take a secret ballot.
Well, all these references... Oh, I don't have references to bogus arguments. My quick response to Senator Ortman is you enumerated all the things your 14-year-old son has. You know, my library card doesn't have a photo. So that would take care of all the St. Paul, Minneapolis folks who have library cards. My credit cards don't have photos. I do have a driver's license that has a photo. That's it. And I'm a driver. And that's what we're concerned about, is that for folks who don't have the significant number of IDs that your 14-year-old son has, we're concerned about what this does with the rest of that population. And the folks who fall through the cracks. And that's why I keep on going back to an enumeration of the instances of fraud within the state of Minnesota, because if we're going to do this, we should make sure there's some empirical basis for doing it and not an anecdotal basis or even a non-existent anecdotal basis. Because what's the downside? I have that single photo ID of a driver's license. But what happens if it's 30 years from now and I no longer have a driver's license? We have some ways that we think will protect folks like that, but I can certainly think of instances where people would have been prohibited from voting at a certain age and in a certain category and in a certain situation.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if Senator Cohen isn't asking us to try to, or we're asking Senator Newman, the author of the bill, to try to prove a negative. I would say, for example, you can answer this, but for example, DWIs. I could give you. You could ask me a statistic. You say, how many DWIs have we had in the state of Minnesota? How many of those crimes have been perpetrated? And we could look it up. We could find out how many cases, convictions, whatever it was, and I could give you a number. But does that mean that nobody else in the state of Minnesota was driving while intoxicated? I think we all know that. That's not the case. You could ask me to ask me how many cases of domestic abuse there were in the state, and or how many instances, and I could look up cases. But does that mean that only those that have been brought forth and made public are the only instances? It's the only cases, but is it the only instances? Well, again, we would say that no, that's not true at all. We know that those sorts of things go on, and you put in systems in place to continually refine that. You put in whatever it might be in those cases. You put more police on the street. You put more whatever you need to do to go at what you know is going on, but you don't know the numbers. We can't say how many people have been driving while intoxicated. There's no way to put a number on that. Likewise, we're not able to say, here's how many people are committing the crime and not being caught. It's a crime that is not a priority for our local law enforcement, our county attorneys and such, to prosecute. So it's hard to even get an accurate representation of what may be going on. So I think you're asking Senator Newman to prove a negative when I don't think he can.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond
quickly. Senator Cohen, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerlach, yeah, I am asking him to prove a negative because it can't be proven. You suggested DUIs and domestic assaults. And, yes, I absolutely agree that there are many instances of people driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs who are not stopped by law enforcement. And there are situations of domestic abuse and violence that are not reported and do not come to the attention of law enforcement. In this particular instance, however, I'm asking for just one or five or ten. You're absolutely right. We can go the courts keep very good records, thanks to modernization, the utilization of computers. Senator Limmer can speak to this as chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And we could determine how many people have been convicted of DUI charges in the state of Minnesota during the past year. How many people were charged? We have the ability to do that. I'm only asking for a little handful. So, yes, I'm asking Senator Newman to prove the negative because the negative, as best we know, doesn't exist.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Senator Newman.
Thank you. And Senator Cohen, I am going to do the best that I can to get you the information that you have requested. I'm going to do the best that I can to get it to you before we go on the Senate floor with this bill. Having said that, I would ask you and my fellow senators to keep in mind that what we really are dealing with is a voter, and this goes to proving the negative. We're dealing with a voter who shows up without any identification, is vouched for, votes, his vote counts, and then that voter walks out the door and disappears. And whether the vote is legitimate or not legitimate is not the issue. The point is there's no way to prove who that voter is. Now, Senator Cohen, I am going to do the best that I can to provide you with the information you've requested. I really am. I guess for purposes of today, we'll just have to leave it there. I mean, I don't have the information with me right now. I am going to do my best.
Senator Limmer, and may I ask Senator Limmer, did you have an amendment to this?
I did, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make an oral amendment. If I could direct your attention to page 2 of the bill. There's been a lot of discussion about the date of the effective date of the bill. We've heard from local city governments that June 30th might be a little bit of a crunch.
Senator Limmer, can you help us with a line?
I'd like line 2.5 and 2.7.
Okay.
Change the date from June 30 to December 1st in both locations. Delete June 30th on lines 2.5 as well as on 2.7 and replace the date December 1st.
Members, you've heard the amendment to change the date on 2.5 and 2.7 from June 30th to December 1st. Was it 1st? December 1st?
Yes, December 1st.
Okay. 2013 in both cases? That doesn't change?
That's correct.
Okay. Discussion on amendment?
Chairman, I'm just curious if the author agrees with this.
Senator Newman, are you agreeable with the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is yes. I have been contacted by some of my local counties, and I... rural legislator, so the answer is yes, I am in agreement with this amendment.
Okay. With that, all in favor of the Senator Oebling?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to speak in favor of the amendment, too. I know there's concern, and it also gives people – we will have to address this issue next session if it passes and lay out the parameters of how this will be administered, what kind of IDs, how people will get them. And I think if, in case that wouldn't be settled till the end of next session, we would need some additional time for people to go out and actually get those IDs if necessary, and this will give them that extra time.
Okay. Further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay. House File 2738, as amendment has been amended once again.
Mr. Chairman,
the amendment stands. Senator Cohen.
Just a quick question. That went pretty well. Could we change 2013 to say 2030? Would that be
we'll get back
acceptable?
To you.
Senator Cohen, you're free to make that motion. Senator Lankset.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little concerned about the meaning of some of the language. It says approved form of government-issued photographic identification. Now, government, it doesn't specify what level of government. Could be state government, county government, city government, township government. Just what does that mean when it says government?
Mr. Newman, thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, we intentionally did not use the word state government because we, for instance, did not want to preclude the legislature from the ability to use, for instance, military IDs. So the words government in the context of this has a very plain meaning in my mind. And it could be federal, it could be state. I don't know whether the county government issues IDs or not, but certainly they would be entitled to take a look at that. But specifically, when I what I had in mind by using government issued was state and federal. I didn't want to preclude, and I also didn't want to preclude, for instance, used in some type of combination, an identification from another state, for instance, a student's driver's license from a different state used in conjunction with another document in the state of Minnesota if they have become a Minnesota resident.
Well, Mr. Chair, one thing I was kind of concerned about was I kind of think it should have been worded different, saying government approved. Because it seems to me like when it comes to college campuses and university campuses and so on, they could issue a photo ID that would definitely prove where the student lived. And it just seems to me this is worded wrong, because I don't think this would allow that, because it says it has to be government issued. Is government is Morehead State University government? It's an appendage of government, but I'm not sure if it would fit this particular meaning of government. I really thought before it should be government approved, so that we could approve college campuses and so on. The main thing is to prove your identity, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
And why should it just have to be government that does that? Can't it be college campuses and so on? I heard, you know, they've held this up in some states in court, and I'd heard that in the state of Texas, which I guess you'd kind of expect something out of that, but they said that if you had a gun registration photo ID, it would work, but if you had a college ID, it wouldn't. Well, I don't know. I just think this needs to be worded in a way that it doesn't have to be government issued, but it has to be something government approves of. And I would see no wrong with approving the students at Morehead State using their student ID. I don't know why that would prove where they lived.
Sir Newman, you want to offer any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman, I have thought about government issued versus government approved. It has been suggested in the past. My feeling is that there's I know what a government issued ID is. I'm not too sure what a government approved ID might be. I think there's a greater degree of integrity with a government issued ID. So I would I will certainly give Senator Lankseth's comments further consideration, but at this point I it would be my position to stay with government issued.
Okay, anyone else? Is Senator Limmer?
Mr. Chair, are we ready to move the bill?
I should ask Senator Limmer if there's anybody who wants to speak in opposition to the bill or offer other comments. Anybody so inclined? I sense none. We'd be in a position then, Senator Limmer, to move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File Number 2738, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the floor.
There's been a motion that House File 2738, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the floor. All in favor? Discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
The rule of the ayes have it. The bill is adopted and will be moved to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Stand adjourned.
Members, the meeting stands adjourned.